Your skin is clammy. There's grit behind your eyeballs. A solitary owl hoots. The world lays creepily silent.
Children of the night.
Then a shadowy figure emerges from the darkness.
The problem is 99% of the planet doesn't know who he is.
Who is that guy?
A rebel. A guardian of everything that's fair in this dog-eat-dog world. One man with an opinion, a studio hotline, and 5 hours to kill.
Let's do this thing.
Bad of the ball. Around Australia on the Triple M Network. Triple M! Welcome to The Night Shift with Luke Boner on the Triple M Network. Welcome to The Night Shift with Luke Boner.
Yeah, that would be me. Oh, hang on. What's that? It's Friday. We love a Friday here on The Night Shift. I can sniff a weekend. What about you? It is Friday, November 17. Good to be with you. Right around Australia, right around the world on the Triple M Network. And my job, as I see it, this morning is to create some conversation. And folks, your job is to participate. The telephone number hasn't changed remarkably overnight. It's 133353. There's plenty of opportunity for you to take part on social media. Facebook is The Night Shift on Triple M. You can tweet us. Jess loves a tweet at MMM Night Shift. And the email is nightshift@triplem.com.au. We've received a ton of response and communication today, and we thank you for that, and I'll run through it in the course of the morning. But in the meantime, it is a radio talk program, so how about we do exactly that? Let's talk on the radio, right around Australia, right around the world, on the Triple M Network. Have you had enough of marriage equality yet? Folks, it's going to dominate the news right up until at least Christmas, or that's when the Prime Minister says he'd like to get this legislation done. I got a funny feeling it may take a little bit longer. But it is interesting to note where a lot of the no votes came from. And you've probably had time to digest this, but Australia's most populated state is also the most divided when it comes to same-sex marriage, with 42% of respondents in New South Wales voting no. Now, I think there's a couple of interesting reasons for that. One, maybe it's to do with where certain religious people have migrated to. I know Western Sydney has a very heavy Muslim population and a very heavy Catholic population. And perhaps that's got something to do with it. I think, to me, one of the most striking things is the 17 electorates in Australia to return a majority no vote, 12 are actually located in Western Sydney. Now, I'm just putting it out there. Do you think that it's a good idea to actually name these suburbs and these electorates where people have voted one way or another? Should we have just looked at the whole plebiscite and said, this is how Australia feels? I just wonder if people who live in those Western suburbs that voted no, is there going to be some sort of a backlash, I wonder? Nine of these electorates are held by Labor, including the electorates of senior MPs Tony Burke. He is in charge of the seat of Watson. Chris Bowen, the seat of McMahon. Both returned yes votes lower than 35%. Now, the interesting dilemma, as I see it, is that these politicians, it's funny how everyone's suddenly being very, very brave, isn't it? Everyone's suddenly got guts. They've all grown balls overnight. You know, up until the plebiscite, very few politicians actually had the guts to come out and say, this is how I want to vote. Now, oh, everyone's voting yes. Oh, of course we're voting yes. Well, why didn't you bloody well do that in the first place and save us $122 million on a plebiscite? But now that the nation has voted, oh, it's easy to surf that wave home, isn't it? Very easy. But what if you want to vote no, but your electorate overwhelmingly says yes, such is the case with the seat of Warringah and Tony Abbott? Now, I think Tony Abbott's done the wise thing and the right thing. He said, okay, I wanted to say no, but my electorate overwhelmingly says yes, and so I'm going to vote yes. But what do you do if you're a yes voter that's in charge of a Western Suburbs electorate that's overwhelmingly saying no? Do you go with your heart and do you say, sorry, constituents, I'm going to do it my way. You voted for me. You voted for my opinion. I'm going to stick it and go yes. Or do you say, well, no, I better go with my constituency because I wouldn't mind being re-elected. It's an interesting subject. Do you vote? Should a politician vote for their own opinion or are they there to represent the people who put them there? That's a good question. We'll have a look at that one this morning. What do you reckon, folks? I'd like to know your opinion. 133353 is the telephone number. Look, this is a seriously bizarre story that came through overnight when we were on air yesterday. An Australian diplomat has died after falling from a New York balcony after celebrating the yes vote for same-sex marriage. He has been hailed as a fine young man who was exceptional at his job, Julian Simpson, only 30 years of age, and he died after falling from the seventh floor of his apartment building in Clinton Street, the Lower East Side of Manhattan, about 1 a.m. Wednesday, local time. Apparently, he and some other fellow Australians were up on the roof of his apartment looking at the Empire State Building, which had been lit up in rainbow colours. And then they got to drinking, and then they got to having some fun, and he died playing what has been called a trust game. Can anyone tell me what a trust game is? I am at a loss. I'm sure more information will come out in time. But he fell from the rooftop of his apartment playing a trust game. Seems very, very strange, doesn't it? If anyone can shed some light on that, I'd be keen to hear. 133353. Oh, look, we've had a lot of follow-up and a lot of emails from security guards since we brought this topic up last night. And I want to shout out and say a very good morning to all the security guards. Another lonely job with the truckies, listening to the night shift around Australia. But we raised the question, should security guards be compulsorily trained in self-defence in order to get a job? Now, on Facebook yesterday, Jess posted some horrifying footage showing a father being headbutted, or pardon me, a father headbutting a security guard when his son was refused entry into a nightclub because the son was wearing joggers. It's absolutely revolting footage, and I know a lot of you have seen it and you've replied to us. If you haven't seen it, you can go to Facebook, The Night Shift on Triple M. Raymond Reeves had been drinking at the Runaway Bay Junior Leagues Club on the Gold Coast on the afternoon of May the 6th. An incident unfolded after the man's son was told he wasn't allowed entry to the club because of the shoes he was wearing. Security cameras on the ground were recording as Reeves turned to leave the premises with his young son. Something made Reeves change his mind, however, and the footage shows the father head back toward the security guard. He approached the man at the door, and after seconds of an intimidating glance in front of his son, Reeves throws his head forward into the guard's face, breaking the security guard's nose. It's unbelievably violent. And the security guard doesn't look like a young bloke. And I immediately asked myself the question, could he have avoided that? The security guard, could he have seen that coming? I want to talk to security guards. How trained are you in looking after yourself physically? Should it be mandatory to have done some sort of self-defense course? I mean, security guards that work in licensed premises are sometimes working with the worst people imaginable. People who are intoxicated, maybe they've just been cut off from service at the bar, so they're angry, they're cranky, they've got a belly full of beer, and that's when people get violent. And we were talking about this last night. It doesn't matter how big and burly the security guards are. Some people just go for you like a bull at a red flag. I don't get it. But if you are a security guard that works where there is service of alcohol, what are some of the pitfalls? And what are some of the dramas that you've encountered? Give us a call and tell us. What's life like as a security guard when you're dealing with drunkards? On 133353, is it compulsory, or should it be compulsory, to have completed some sort of a self-defense course? Give us a call and let us know. Also this week, we've had a lot of discussion about animal cruelty. Here's another one. Listen to this. A Queensland woman who left a young foal to die claims she didn't take it to get help because, are you ready for this? She doesn't like vets. Tracy Derren, she's 44, left the eight-month-old foal with injuries for 4 days to die, as well as extreme dehydration, according to the Queensland Times. The injuries were so bad, and some were more than a week old, making the young foal unable to stand. It couldn't move. It couldn't even see out of one of its eyes. A vet euthanized the foal as the fairest option for the young horse. This woman owns another 4 horses. Did she get a jail term? No. The 44-year-old woman was ordered to pay $4,192.90, according to the Queensland Times, where more than half of it is paid to the RSPCA. So we've heard this week case after case after case of animal cruelty going unpunished. And there's another one, eh? How could you do that to a horse? And your excuse is, I don't like vets. That will just about do me. 133353, if you want to get through. Plenty to talk about this morning. What do you make of this? The AFL has released a sweeping new set of guidelines aimed at protecting women. Fantastic. Haven't got a problem with that. The policy comes almost 2 years after the league promised a review following revelations Richmond star Dustin Martin had threatened a woman with a chopstick. Remember that? The AFL confirmed the policy was handed to clubs on Wednesday night. Now, it comes just weeks after Richmond and the AFL suspended Premiership defender Nathan Broad for the first 3 home and away games of next season as punishment for sharing a photo of a topless woman without her consent. The incident prompted a police investigation, which was later dropped. Now, this hotline that the AFL has set up, it's going to be an anonymous hotline. So women who feel as though they've been abused by AFL players will be able to leave anonymous information. Now, I think that's all well and good, but I've got a couple of questions. Just a couple of questions. Why, in the year 2017, haven't we educated men, particularly footballers, that harassing women is wrong? Why isn't that just taken? But here is the second question. What if the woman scorned is lying? What happens then? Could an anonymous hotline be abused? A woman is attracted to a certain player. The player rejects her advances. She's scorned. She rings an anonymous hotline. Next thing you know, the player's in trouble. I think it's a great idea. Any initiative that stops the harassment of women, hear, hear, I'm all for it. But regular listeners to this program know full well that a lot of men are treated very badly. And some women lie. What happens if they lie here? I think you've got to be very, very careful. Now, Nathan Broad, as I said, he has been suspended for the first 3 home and away games for forwarding that photo of that woman without her consent. Mind you, she consented to have the photo taken. She didn't consent for him to forward it. There is one way to avoid all of this, and I said it before and I'll say it again. Ladies, don't take your clothes off in front of a camera. Problem solved. 133353 is the telephone number. I want to talk about this morning. I know that you'll have some interesting thoughts. It's an initiative that Scotland's trying. Scotland has won the right to be the first country in the world to tackle alcohol abuse by setting a minimum price on booze. The Scottish Parliament passed a law 5 years ago ruling that no alcohol could be sold below a price determined by its alcohol content, proposed at 50p per unit. Now, the law was left unenforced. However, while the Scotch Whisky Association and two Belgian wine and spirits groups fought against it in the UK Supreme Court, saying it was inconsistent with European trade rules, they argued it would have an unfair effect on imports and was a barrier to free trade. Well, on Wednesday, the Supreme Court rejected the whisky makers' arguments, paving the way for Scotland to put its law into effect most likely early next year. So, basically, you won't be able to sell alcohol lower than a minimum price prescribed by the alcohol content. In other words, cheap alcohol will not be available. Would that work in this country? Would it work? Alcohol-related hospital discharges and deaths rose substantially in the last 30 years. Chronic liver disease, psoriasis, mortality rates are up. And it's not just here in Australia, it's worldwide. If there was no such thing as really cheap alcohol, and I'm talking about cheap spirits, I'm talking about goon, would that work? Has increasing the price of cigarettes curb smoking? Would increasing the price of alcohol decrease alcohol consumption? Scotland's going to do it. And a lot of people will be watching. What do you reckon? The end of cheap booze. Give us a call and let us know how you feel on that one. 133353 is the telephone number. Look, there's a lot of other stuff I want to get to this morning. And we will do it together. I want to hear what's on your mind. I want to hear what you're thinking. What do you want to take into the weekend? What's happened this week that you haven't been able to get on and talk about? Now's your time. Now's your chance. Jess is ready to go. 133353 is the telephone number. You can get through to us on Facebook, The Night Shift on Triple M. You can tweet us at MMM Night Shift. And you can email nightshift@triplem.com.au. We are off and running. This is The Night Shift around Australia.
Can't sleep? Bored on the job? Get amongst the conversation now on The Night Shift. This is Luke Boner with Jess around Australia on the Triple M Network.
Yeah, lots to talk about. It's Friday, November 17, 133353. Now, all the lines are full at this point. As soon as there's some space, I'll let you know. But in the meantime, get in touch with us on social media because we love to hear your thoughts. Off to Hobart. Alicia, g'day.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Nice to have you listening in Tasmania. How's Tassie today?
Still drizzly rain today.
Let me have a look. Let me have a little look here for you, Alish. 25 today, that's not too bad.
Yep.
It's going to be mostly sunny come this afternoon, all right?
Yeah, that'll be all right when I'm napping before work.
What do you do?
I'm a vet nurse.
Okay. Now, this week we've talked a lot about animal cruelty and the RSPCA's frustration that so many people are charged with cruelty to animals, some of it pretty serious, people pleading guilty to the charges, and no one's going to jail. They get off with a slap on the wrist. It must frustrate you.
Yes, and I know a lot of people in the industry that it does frustrate as well, because what's the point of even taking them to court when they just get a fine? And then just, what's the actual point of it all?
What is the actual point of it all? So, you're ringing in response to that story about the lady and the horse. It was a foal.
Yes.
And she said that she didn't treat the horse because she doesn't like vets. Can you? That was her defence. Can you believe it?
No, it's just ridiculous, really. I mean, she could have had another reason of, you know, money or something like that. But at the end of the day, that animal is under her care and it's looking at her for all of its food, treatment, everything, and it can't do anything for itself. So, you know, she should be held responsible and more than just fine. You know, why aren't these people going to jail?
If you've just joined us, a Queensland woman has left a young foal to die. She claims she didn't take it to get help because she doesn't like vets. Tracy Derren, 44, she left an eight-month-old foal with terrible injuries for 4 days in a paddock. A vet had to come and euthanise the foal. She pleaded guilty at Ipswich Magistrates Court to one breach of duty of care to an animal. And she's been ordered to pay a fine. The RSPCA gets a fair whack of that fine. But why would you do that? She has four other horses. Wouldn't you? As far as I'm aware, she's allowed to keep the other four horses. There was a terrible story that we heard of earlier in the week about a bloke who entrusted his little pug dog to a professional dog sitting service. Did you hear this?
Yeah, I believe. I think I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah. The dog came with a little harness, and the harness was incorrectly fitted and was too tight. And the owner noticed it when they were sending photos of the dog, as some services do, while he was away on holidays. They pleaded guilty to cruelty to animals, but they're allowed to keep the business.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Why would people trust, you know, that these people are thinking that they're doing the right thing by entrusting a business to look after their animals, and they shouldn't be allowed to.
If you were running a child minding centre and you were found guilty of cruelty to a child, do you reckon you'd be allowed to keep your child minding business?
Highly doubt it, but because it's animals, apparently it's just not as classed as high, which is ridiculous.
Now, you told Jess that you own horses.
I do, yeah.
And you've seen some terrible cases. I'll shut up now. You tell me what you've seen.
Oh, I can't get into too much detail, but I just know of cases, you know, I've been witness to, I've taken on cases that have been in terrible conditions, not had their feet done, not had, you know, their teeth done, not being fed properly. And, you know, under a coat or under a rug, the condition of what could be under that, like hiding under that, is just terrible. And the problem is that these people get, like you say, they don't get banned from owning animals again. They still get to keep animals.
It is unbelievable. Incidentally, some people have just dropped out. There are a couple of lines available. 1-333-53. If you've been trying to get through, yeah, you can do it now. Look, nothing makes me angrier than cruelty to animals. I'm an animal lover, and animals can't, you know, they can't speak, can they?
No, and it goes back to the call you had a few weeks ago where he dipped the cat in paint, like,
oh, yeah.
And he got off. Like, you know, why did he get off? Well, he still did the act. It didn't matter that the cat was in his yard. He still dipped that cat in paint. Why did he get off?
That's right. I don't know if he was actually... Was he reported?
Yeah, he was reported. And he apparently... I remember he said that he pleaded guilty, but he said that because he had confronted the neighbour about it beforehand and the neighbour denied it, that he managed to get off the charges and he was laughing about it.
That's right. The next door neighbour's cat kept coming into his yard and pooping in his sandpit. And he said something and the cat still came. Oh, that's right. The guy said, it's not my cat.
Yep.
So he dipped it in paint. That's right.
Mm-hmm. And then he thought it was just a big joke that he dipped it in paint and he got off.
He did.
Got free. What health concerns does that paint have to that animal? Mm-hmm. Does he even consider that? Mm-hmm. Did he even think twice about what... I know, yeah, okay, it's annoying having a cat poo in the sandbox, but at the same time, it's still an animal. It doesn't know any better. It's just doing what its behaviour, what it's, you know, what it's been taught to do is to poo in dirt.
Yeah.
It's not... It's the owner's fault for not confining it and, well, kind of the council's problem for not making proper council laws. Like, I've lived all over Australia, and the amount of just stray animals that are attacking, you try and go for a walk and they're attacking. Where are these owners? You know? And I know that people whinge that pets are all in it for the money and everything like that, but they don't consider staffing and building and registration for vets and registrations for x-ray machinery and things like that. And the drug, you know, we don't make much money at all. And people say, oh, I don't like vets. Well,
yeah,
they're just trying to look after... They didn't get into that profession to drive Porsches or anything like that. I don't know any of my vet friends or any of my vet nurse friends that, you know, have mountains and drive fantastic cars. They all do it for one particular thing because they love animals.
They love animals. And it's very stressful. Very stressful job being a vet because I would imagine the hardest part about being a vet or a veterinary nurse like yourself is when somebody's beloved pet, a member of their family, has to be euthanised.
Oh, it's one of those things that you learn how to deal with it. But everyone, like, I've been a nurse for 13 years now, and every once in a while you feel for everyone that you do. But every once in a while you get one that just shatters you, and it shatters the whole team, because you might have only looked after that animal for, you know, 12 hours. But you've put everything into trying to save it. The owners have put everything into trying to save it. And at the end of the day, you know, you still have to, you can't save them all, but it's hard. But at the same time, when you look at some of the conditions or some of the medical issues that they have, it is nice to know that you can end any suffering that they may be doing. But animals shouldn't have to suffer like that horse or like their foal.
No, you're absolutely right. Well, look, it's been lovely talking to you. What's it like living in Hobart?
I've only lived down here for 3 years, but I absolutely love it. My partner's from down here. He was in the army beforehand, so he wanted to come home, so we've come home for him. And I'm a Queensland girl, but I'm down here now, and I wouldn't change it. It's just, there's always something to do. The place is amazing. It's got beautiful countryside and things to do. And the people are really friendly. I've never, because being in the army, we've travelled around towns and things, and I've never moved to a place where everyone wants to know how your day was, and, you know, gives you right of way in the driving and waves you down the street, and, you know, and remembers things that you say. They don't just say it, you know, they don't just ask how your day was the next time you go to that shop. They remember what you talked about last time and asked you how you were. It's amazing. So, yeah.
Well, it's been lovely talking to you, and thank you very much for ringing up. And you do a great job. We it must break your heart when you see animals that have been mistreated.
It does. But yeah, thanks for talking to me.
Hey, this got a question for you. In Tasmania, mm-hmm. Is there a curfew on cats?
There isn't. I believe they're trying to pass one. I know when I was in Queensland, they were also trying to pass one. I don't know if it actually got passed, or they were trying to register cats. But I know in Tasmania there isn't as yet. I've got two cats. One goes into my backyard because he can't actually jump the fence. The other one is a Devon Rex, so she doesn't never leave the house. So.
Yeah. In New South Wales, there's a curfew. Sun up, sun down. Cats have to be in at night.
Mm-hmm.
Because they hunt. But there is talk of more states introducing this, and indeed some councils are suggesting that cats should be inside 24/7.
See, I don't agree with that as much, but I do agree that cats should have a curfew or be kept in, you know, there's amazing cat runs or patios that that companies that come in and make catios and things like that. Cats need enrichment just as much as a dog needs to go for a walk and go for a run at the park. They still need enrichment, you know, hunting toys. You know, we don't want them killing the wildlife, but they still need to be enriched, just as a bird shouldn't be kept in a cage 24/7. So each animal, just because, you know, that's what society has done before, I think now we're trying to curve into what that animal actually needs to be enriched and to make its life full, rather than just doing the basics and say, I've got a cat, I've got a dog, I've got this. You know, they're becoming more part of the family.
Yeah. Look, I'm going to put this on Facebook a little bit later on. It's a poem I learnt at school. Have you heard of Carmen Bonnard de Gastaud, a French poet who wrote a book of poems called Prayers of the Ark? And all the animals that go into the ark have a little prayer. Have you heard of it?
I don't think I have, but it sounds interesting.
Yeah, I'll put it on Facebook, because you might want to put it up in your reception at your vet.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one that I particularly like. It's only very short, and it's called The Prayer of the Dog. You haven't heard of it?
I may have when you read it, but...
Okay.
Yeah, or when you pop it on Facebook.
Yeah, I'll put it on Facebook. It's The Prayer of the Dog, and it's very short, and it goes like this. And are you a dog lover?
I've got dogs, I've got cats, I've got horses.
Okay,
so.
You'll love this. Okay. It goes, Lord, I keep watch. If I'm not here, who will guard their house? Watch over their sheep. Be faithful. No one but you and I understands what faithfulness is. They call me good dog. Nice dog. Words. I take their pats and the old bones they throw me, and I seem pleased. They really believe they make me happy. I take their kicks too when they come my way, but none of that matters. I keep watch. Lord, do not let me die until for them all danger is driven away. Amen.
That's beautiful. It's actually really touching.
Isn't it great? I'll get Jess to put it on Facebook. You have a lovely day.
You too.
Okay, nice to talk.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
This is The Night Shift. The Night Shift on the Triple M Network.
To Adelaide. G'day, Ron.
There you go, mate.
Good, Ron. What's up? Why are you up? Well, actually, for you, it's what's the time in Adelaide?
It is 12 o'clock. 10 past 12.
10 past 12, midnight.
Yeah, mate.
Yep. Okay, what's up?
I'm just ringing up about the alcohol.
Yeah. For those who missed it, Scotland is trying to attack alcoholism and alcohol-related violence. They want to ban cheap booze. They want to put a bottom cap price on alcohol. I wonder if it'll work. What do you reckon?
It will, but I think it'll go to the black market.
Yeah, that's what everyone's worried about.
Yeah, you know, you turn around, it's like you get out there and people are making spirits now, especially here in Adelaide, you know, and you can buy a bottle of cheap alcohol for $13, $14 a bottle.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it's not expensive to make the stuff. So you turn around and it's like, yeah, people just go out and buy it on the black market instead of buying it out of the shops.
Yeah, well, tell me, I don't know whether you know or not, but is home brewing big in Adelaide?
It is.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
You know, I know. I'm a truck driver by trade, and you know, there's always offerings. You want to buy cheap alcohol? And it's just didn't trade.
Yeah, I met a bloke on one of the trips I took who was not a beer home brewer. He used to make his own spirits. And I said to him, isn't that illegal? And he said it's illegal to have a still. I'll have to find out. What's the law in Adelaide or in South Australia, do you know?
Well, as far as I know, you can make it for yourself.
You can't sell it.
Right. But you cannot sell it.
Correct. That's what homebrew. That's the situation with homebrew in New South Wales.
Yep. Yeah. I meant to believe that you can make it for yourself, but you can't sell it.
Yeah.
Because you've got to have a license for it.
Well, that's right, and I understand that. I homebrewed for a long, long time. I didn't homebrew in bottles. I brewed in kegs.
Yep.
20-liter post mix kegs, and I did that for a long time. I ended up getting sick of it. I might start it again now. I've got the man cave going. But I've often wondered why someone's allowed to make all the beer they can possibly make, and pretty strong beer, but you're not allowed to grow your own dope for your own consumption.
That's it. You know, it's catch-22 because, you know, you turn around and everything's in the shops. You know, we've got a shop called Bacon Brew over here. And
Bacon Brew.
Yeah, it's called Bacon Brew. And it sells your brewer's yeast, different alcohols, even different spirits. And you turn around, you go in the shop, and you can actually buy the yeast for the spirits. I've made spirits. And it only works out to be $7 a bottle.
What sort of spirits have you made?
It's like Johnny Bird. Instead of called Johnny Walker, it's called Johnny Jogger.
Johnny Jogger. So you make like a Scotch whiskey.
Yeah.
But doesn't it take at least 12 years to make a good Scotch whiskey? Is yours pretty rough? Is yours a little bit like the gin they made in MASH?
No, mate.
No?
No, you turn around and it only takes 2 weeks.
2 weeks?
Yeah, 2 weeks to make us do it.
Really?
Yeah. And it goes through a fermenting process, which takes about 3-4 days. Right, then you turn around and then you've got to cook the alcohol off, which is at a certain temperature. And then you turn around and it's like you mix your alcohol with distilled water and add your spirits. Well, you go.
I thought it was illegal to make spirits.
Well, I don't know, because you turn around, you can buy the spirit in the shop.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see how this works in Scotland, because they like a drink in Scotland.
Yeah, they do.
And what they're going to do is they've actually passed the law 5 years ago, but they haven't acted on it. Basically, alcohol will be sold. It cannot be sold below a certain price that will be determined by the alcohol content.
Yep.
So I don't know.
Look, no, I never used to sell it. I used to drink it, and when I go to a party, I'd take a bottle with me. But, you know, there's no way that you could turn around and sell it, because, hey, somebody snooshed it, you're selling alcohol. It's like, no. But you sit there and you guys turn around and it's like, oh, that's a nice drink, because there's no additives to it.
Yes.
And it's like, yeah, people just... I think people are going to go the way that cheaper spirits by black market.
That's what they're worried about. That if the cheaper alcohol is not available, that people will find it somehow. It's like cigarettes. You know, you put the price up.
Yeah.
You put the price of cigarettes up to a certain point, and people will say, "Well, I can't afford it, but I'm not going to give up because I like smoking." They'll go and find it illegal somewhere.
That's it. Yeah, like the other guy the other day under the counter.
Yeah.
There's a will, there's a way.
Exactly. Yeah. Where there is a will, there's a way. Listen, thanks for your call.
Not a problem, mate.
Okay, see you, Ron. Bye. Ron in Adelaide. 133-53 is the telephone number. Yeah, I wonder if it'll work. So plenty to talk about this morning. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this anonymous hotline for women that the AFL is going to establish. Anything that helps women who are being harassed is a good thing. Anything that stops women from being treated badly is a good thing, so long as it's legitimate. It will be an anonymous hotline, and I just worry that a woman scorned may well use the anonymity to get somebody into trouble that they've just had a blue with, or maybe been rejected by. Or I don't know, you'll have to be very, very careful. You'd have to be very, very careful. What do you make of it? 133-53 is the telephone number. And our first call this morning was an absolute ripper, security guard. His name was Steve from Newcastle. And he says that the security business needs a complete overhaul. This follows some frightening footage that Jess has put on our Facebook page of a father headbutting a security guard. Raymond Reeves, Runaway Bay Junior Leagues Club. The footage is on Facebook. Have a look at it. And if you are in security, you tell me how that could have been avoided. Should it be compulsory for security guards to have self-defense lessons to get the job? More in a moment.
Welcome to the Night Shift with Luke Boner.
Good morning, Australia, and welcome to a brand new day. It's a significant day today.
Yeah, go on.
It's the 17th of November.
I know what today is.
Today, the Minister for War and Finance is a year older than me. For 7 months, we're the same age, and then the 17th of November comes around, and because she was born the year before me, see, I was born in May.
Yeah.
We were in the same year at school, but she's 7 months old. So from the 17th of November until the 10th of May next year, I remain her toy boy.
How does that make you feel?
Oh, hot. Sexy.
Okay. Wanted. Okay.
Virile.
I regret I asked. Oh.
Sorry.
Really?
Sorry.
This is where we're taking it.
Happy birthday, darling, my little nest of vipers. My little piranha fish.
You get her a gift?
My little swarm of blue bottles. Although, I got her two tickets to Midnight Oil tonight.
You said no.
I got her two tickets.
Did you pay for them or was it a rort?
It was a rort.
Yep. And there it is, folks.
I thought when I get home I could cook a breakfast.
You?
Or go via Macca's and deliver a bacon and egg McMuffin.
Oh, my goodness. Your definition of cooking breakfast. Go on.
Or I'm not going to Midnight Oil with her, by the way. She's taking her best friend. But I could take her to lunch, but that means I've got to leave the house. So I would.
Forget it. Forget I asked. Forget. Just move on. It's getting very complicated.
Anyway, happy birthday. I just wanted to bring something up with our listeners, and I wanted to run your opinion by this. This, to me, is a massive case of reverse discrimination. I think you know the story I'm about to talk about. There is a website called Tube Crush. TubeCrush. Tube Crush. It is the biggest thing in the UK at the moment. And what it is women commuting on the train, the tube, secretly take photos of attractive men. And then they post those photos on this site called Tube Crush. The men don't know they're being photographed. The men have not given them permission to have their photos put on Tube Crush. But it's the biggest thing going through the UK at the moment. Tube Crush. Let me read it to you here. This is from the Mirror, the UK Mirror. Tube Crush is a site where women and gay men secretly take and share pictures of London's attractive men on the underground. Our questions aside about being a little voyeuristic and creepy, the site has nevertheless proved to be very popular and is growing in popularity. Users are allowed to post comments underneath the picture and invite others to share their thoughts and feelings about the photo. Researchers from Coventry and Aberystwyth universities have also been pursuing the images for academic reasons and have analysed the data to discover what women are looking for in a potential partner. There has been a reaction to the photos. The site's existence has raised some important points and double standards. This is what gets me. Tube Crush. Women secretly taking photos of men on the tube and posting them for other people to comment. If that was a site where men were sneakily, that's the word the Mirror uses, secretly taking photos of attractive women and posting them on a website, inviting men to comment, wouldn't the world be howling and screaming? This is a clear case of reverse discrimination. Are you with me?
I do agree. If it was the other way around, wouldn't be going down a treat.
It is unbelievable. And they brag about it. Tube Crush. I mean, the men haven't given their permission to have the photos uploaded, and let alone be commented on. But the whole thing is you've got to take the photo without the man knowing. They're not supposed to be posed photographs. How wrong is that?
It's pretty bad.
Imagine if it was men being encouraged to take photos of women without their knowledge and posting them on a website encouraging comments. It's unbelievable. I know I keep saying that there are some topics, you know, there are people out there in Triple M land that wake up in the morning and they go, how can I be offended today? I know that. But when I saw this online today, I had to make a note and I had to talk about it. I just can't get it. Men are hounded left, right and center. There you have that woman that she volunteered to have a photo taken by that AFL footballer. He said that he deleted it, but then shared it, and it went round. It went round. I mean, she shouldn't have taken her clothes off. He shouldn't have uploaded the photo. But everyone was screaming about that, screaming. Here is a website in the UK where it encourages women to take photographs of men without their knowledge and post them. Come on.
Well, the same stance needs to be taken, regardless of gender, right? Even the way the article's written, I mean, it's not written in a tone that would suggest it's wrong behaviour. They're kind of making a joke out of it a bit, aren't they?
They are. Is this on Facebook?
It'll be up there within minutes for you, Luke.
Can you put can you put it there? And I want to ask the question, is this reverse discrimination? If the same thing was happening with men taking photographs of women without their knowledge, putting them on a website, encouraging people to comment, would it be taken as a joke like this is? I don't bloody well think so.
Around Australia on the Triple M Network, this is The Night Shift with Luke Burner. The Night Shift.
133353, some feedback. Feedback, I did it again. Feedback, Facebook feedback. Hi, Luke and Jess. This is Dave. Dave from Riverland, South Australia. Love your show and great choice of music and chats. Keep up the great work. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate your support. Beck on Facebook. Luke, my partner, and I love listening to your show. What's the song you play at 5:30? That's a secret. Colin Zeno says, huge shout out to the devilish duo, Luke and Jess. It's Long Neck Friday. Have a great show, guys. Politicians are supposed to represent the majority views of their constituents, but they often just follow the party line like sheep. It's not that democratic. That is David on Twitter. You're right, David. Stephen on Twitter says, in regards to the minimum price of alcohol, I saw this on the BBC News last night, and they were showing the prices of alcohol in Scotland. A bottle of wine was listed at costing £2.89, £3.81 Australian. I know of nowhere else in the UK where you can get wine at that price. Yeah, Scotland's looking at putting a minimum price on alcoholic beverages, depending on the alcoholic content. They want to get rid of cheap alcohol. They're trying to defuse alcoholism. We're getting rid of cheap grog help. It's another one of our topics this morning. An email from Andy says, an idea for gun control. After passing a shooting course and a safety and mental health check, gun owners should only be allowed to have a six-shooter revolver to protect themselves and their homes. If they want to own anything other than that, then they should be kept at a police-run gun storage facility, where you have to sign out your gun for a set period of time with a doctor's certificate showing that if you aren't having a breakdown or have lost the will to live, fit the gun with a GPS so that police can keep track of who got what and where they are. He's put some thought into that. That is from Andy. So more feedback coming through. 133353, Carl, good day.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thank you, Carl. Thanks for waiting on.
No problem.
You're on the Gold Coast.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, talk to me.
Well, I grew up in Southern California in regards to guns in America. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, from a young age, you know, kids are given BB guns, yep. 22s, things like that, you know, just to go shooting. Rifle ranges, things like that, fine. But the gang violence and the accessibility of guns over there is, you know, you can walk down the street and somebody will sell you a gun. I had a number of guns pointed at me. I lived there till I was 18 years old, and I probably was in the vicinity of somebody shooting or being shot at or, you know, having guns pointed at me probably about four or five times by the time I was 16, 17.
You've had
it's totally random gang violence.
You've had loaded guns pointed at you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Gee. I do an art called Scrimshaw, and a guy was setting up his garage to do a sort of home business with deer antler engraving. I used to do engravings on the deer antler and moose horn and stuff like the old whalers used to do on the whale's teeth. I still do it, but there was a guy. We used to answer the door, this kind of neighborhood, with a 38 semi-automatic pistol. He had a 44 Magnum that used to sit on the dining table. So happened somebody came to the door saying that he knew Bob, the fellow that owned the place. There was two guys at the door. They usually answer the door with a gun. They said they had friends of a friend. They wanted to come over and look at some of the stuff he was selling. He had just been to the bank, got $1,500 out of the bank. And as soon as the guy turned his back, they pulled out two guns and came into the kitchen and put Bob on the floor, started kicking him, you know, where's the money, where's the money? They'd followed him all day, seeing his tracks. And I was in the backyard just doing my artwork, sitting at the back table. And I heard a bit of, you know, commotion going on, so I decided I'd go up and see what was going on. When I looked through the back door, through the screen, luckily the light was right where they couldn't see me, but I could see them. And I seen what they were doing with the guns, pointing the guns at him and kicking him on the floor, and it was him yelling. I ran and jumped the fence, tried to ring the cops. Nobody would let me into the house to ring the police because they were afraid that I was somebody that was going to rob them. You know, things like that. But the way that it is over there, I would never want it to, you know, become like that over here. I've been here 35 years now, and I see the American influence through the gangs, you know, young Australian men and, you know, teenagers walking around like gangbangers, and they really have no idea. Like, drop them in the middle of L.A., in the middle of Watts, or in the middle of Compton, or something like that, and then that'll wake them up. I'm sure they'll change their tune.
But let's talk about the general gun culture. The general gun culture in America. Ma and Pa, okay? Everyone, would you say it's fair to say most American households have a firearm?
I would say at least 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10. And is it for mostly for protection?
It is. It is in the, you know, with it, because there's so much segregation still over there that people, you know, you see it on the news all the time with the police, you know, against the African Americans, and there's so many groups, Vietnamese and Mexicans and things like that, where they're all segregated. They all have their own hoods, you know, their own turf, where you cannot walk across their park or go down their area. You know, there's places in Santa Ana and Southern California where the police won't even go. You know, I mean, it is that scary in the sense that you do not go out of where you know you're safe.
And the culture itself, it's never going to be able to be turned around, is it?
No. America's been at war inside of America for that long, never mind where it goes overseas. But I mean, it's drummed into them. When I was 18 years old, I mean, I got a phone call from every armed force in America, because once you turn 18, you can join the Army, Marines, whatever. But I mean, the gun culture in itself is so, they really don't think of it as where it comes from. They just know that they seem to think, well, I need this for protection. I need to protect myself, my family. You know,
so basically everyone has a gun because everyone has a gun.
That's right. And they feel the same thing. If everybody didn't have a gun and if it was outlawed, then only the criminals would have guns.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the president, he said, I forget which school shooting it was. Isn't that terrible? There's so many. You forget which one.
They're every week now.
You know, but he said that's why the teachers should be armed.
Yeah. I mean, it's just gotten ridiculous. It really has. And where they, you hear on the media of these big mass shootings and things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, there are all the ones that don't get reported, of course. I mean, there'd be thousands and thousands a day that don't get reported where only one or two people get murdered, you know?
Yeah,
well, they don't find out that they've been murdered by a gun or whatever.
A mass shooting is four or more.
Yeah, that's right. It's not worth getting into the media unless it's four or more or whatever. But
I'm glad you're right. I'm just trying to get inside the head, you know, the psyche of your average American. And why they hold their Second Amendment and their guns so near and dear. It's never going to change, is it?
No. It is after the Civil Wars. There's been Mexican-American War. They've always been armed. I mean, look at the cowboy movies. There was a culture, you know, that you grew up as a cowboy, you know, killing Indians, you know. There was no second guessing about whose side you were on, in a sense. They made it as though there was always an enemy. There's always an enemy there that's going to hurt somebody, you know. They live in fear and they can control you, you know, in a sense of...
Yes. It must be very strange. See, most Australians grow up and live and work and sleep in suburbs where you don't hear gunshots.
No, that's right. That's right. I came over here, like I said, 35 years ago, and it was paradise. And it's such a shame that with all the violence now, I mean, the stabbings, you're hearing that now every day, somebody being stabbed in a club, somebody being stabbed in their front yard, somebody being stabbed here and there at little parties. But
we have our fair share of drive-by shootings, too.
I mean, it's creeping in with the gang violence and the drugs. That's where it all, you know, is obvious.
Yeah, that's right. All right, look, Carl, thank you for that, and welcome to Australia. 35 years, you reckon?
Yeah, that's it.
You're an Australian citizen?
Not as yet.
Oh, look, quick, run for politics.
Yeah, I heard it's all changing.
Okay, thanks, Carl.
All right, good on you.
Okay, bye-bye. Hang on, 35 years, why haven't you become an Australian citizen?
My sister has, and my brother has.
We're not good enough for you.
No. I was just talking about it last night to my daughter, and where the dual citizenships for them, if they want to go back to the States and stuff like that. I feel like I'm a citizen of the world. I've been around a little bit. I've been around the world.
You don't live around the world. You live in Australia.
Yeah, I know. I love Australia to death, and you know what? I thank God it's such a beautiful place.
Yeah, we're very, very lucky. We take it for granted. Listen, Carl, I'll let you go. Thank you. Why are you up?
I was just going to bed, but I would have been asleep an hour ago if I wouldn't have heard what you were saying on the radio.
Yeah, we keep people up. That's our job. Listen, Carl, thank you for that. Call back any time. All right.
All right. Good on you, mate.
Okay.
All right.
This is The Night Shift.
From 2. You got a boner all night. Luke Boner, The Night Shift. Around Australia on the Triple M network.
Yeah, that's us. Email here from Sin. Hi, Sin. She says, hi, Luke and Jess. Great show. I'm a female security guard in a small town in country New South Wales. I don't work with liquor, but I do mobile patrols, and I definitely think that we, females especially, should at least be given some basics in self-defense. Sure, I don't work with intoxicated people, but there has been some close shaves with criminals and break-ins. But in saying that, if you're not careful and hurt someone simply by doing a self-defense move, you can end up yourself in a lot of trouble. I love my job. My boss is great, and the best thing he has taught me is to not put myself in any position to compromise my safety, because at the end of the day, everything is replaceable except your life. Thank you, Sin. Don't meet many female security guards. Yes, it's an interesting topic. It's certainly connected with a lot of you this morning. Tony's online. G'day, Tony.
Hey, mate. My name's actually Jamie, but I came through loudspeaker, I guess, as Tony, but yeah. How are we going?
She's written Tony. Look, I'll sack her.
It's my fault. Driving.
I'll sack her. She's gone.
No, definitely not. She's awesome.
No, she's gone.
Okay, my name's Tony then.
Jess? Hang on.
Tony or Jamie?
It's Jamie.
You didn't correct me once. How long did we chat for? How many times did I check in with you? Not once.
Oh, I just thought it was funny.
So you're having a chat with Jess off air and you never corrected her?
No, I don't do that. I don't want to be like that. It's all good.
Listen, Tony, it's a terrible mistake. Would you like me to get rid of her?
No, definitely not. Give her a pay rise.
Yeah, we'll call you whatever you like. I like you.
Gender pay gap, isn't it?
Moving right along. Thank you, Tony. Moving right along. What's up?
I was going to talk about the whole the London debacle, the tube cash or whatever it's called.
Jess, is this story on Facebook yet? It's on our Facebook. Read it for yourself. I can't believe it. Tube crush.
It's called. You won't get me on Facebook, so don't worry about that. Just all I wanted to say is it's the world has flipped itself upside down. And I think me being I guess I'm 32, I'm male, I'm white. I've got a 9-month-year-old daughter. So the world's going to be her oyster for sure because, even in the company I work for, it's all about promoting females in the business. It's not about the best person for the role or anything like that. It's all about making up for the sins from about 40 years ago. This is just ridiculous what's happening over in London, because if the shoe was on the other foot, it would be people would be going nuts. All the feminists would be going crazy.
Can you imagine?
Just thought I'd give you a yell and have a chat. Never been on radio, so saying I've been following about the whole about gender equality and freedom of speech and stuff like that, and how Australia's changing. But
look, if this was the other way around, you're right. Every feminist, the world would be screaming.
100%.
Yep.
Yep. So, I think, look, at the end of the day, no one should deserve to have their picture taken in without their, consent or anything like that. But it sounds like it's harmless fun, but I'm just calling up because at the end of the day, it's the other way around. Yeah,
but seriously, here is a website. It's called Tube Crush. It is specifically for women. It encourages women to take secret, sneaky photographs of men on the tube, on the train, and then upload those photographs to the website called Tube Crush for other women to comment on. Where is Jermaine Greer on this?
Yeah, well, I look at it this way. It's pretty creepy. It's stalkish behaviour. So
where is Jermaine? Where is Jermaine Greer on this? Seriously, not a word.
No, definitely not. I'm sure if you ask what other people who are loudspeakers of feminists in Australia, if they're going to actually make a comment on it, no, they'll keep well away from it. So, one of those things, isn't it? You just have to been a 32-year-old white male and just gonna have to suck it up and let it run its course.
And then you have
if we say anything, we get in trouble for it. So
I know.
And I don't want to make it's about males or females, because the majority of both sexes are sensible. It's just you have the small percentages on either side are a bit how you going?
And not only is there not a word about this being reverse discrimination. You've got academics from Coventry University doing research on these photos because they think it's interesting to see what sort of men women like. Can you believe this? Not a word about how creepy the whole thing is, but they find that researchers from Coventry University say, it's fascinating to see what sort of men these women like: smart, suited city workers, toned gym goers, flashing their flesh. The men featured in the photographs on Tube Crush show that as a culture, we celebrate masculinity in the form of money and muscle, wealthy, mobile, sexually powerful male bodies, not as a political one as feminists intend it to be, but one that should be actively desired, said one academic. Not one mention that this is really creepy. It's voyeuristic. And I also reckon illegal.
Yeah, well, 100% is illegal. But I reckon if you put the other way around, if you ask any of those men how they felt like getting photos taken of them and what they find attractive about a female or what they're attracted to, they'll say definitely not a woman who's taking photos of me and making comments about me. That's not very attractive at all. That's a poor behaviour, and you know it's not a great quality to have in life.
Oh God, here we are with the AFL setting up a hotline, an anonymous hotline for women to ring if they think they're being harassed, and at the same time you've got this website, Tube Crush, bragging that they're sneakily and surreptitiously taking photographs of men on the train and uploading them for public comment. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Tony, thanks for your call.
Take care, mate.
Yeah, you take care too. Bye-bye now. Nathan, g'day.
There you go, mate.
Another Adelaide call.
And another security guard.
Another security guard. Okay, what's up?
I've got a couple of things I'll touch base on. First, I'll go through what the last security guard from Adelaide, Bill, was talking about with the powers of arrest if someone gets caught shoplifting.
Yep.
We actually have no powers of arrest.
I didn't think so.
Absolutely no doubt. The only way we can detain someone physically is to then become violent.
Did Bill do the wrong thing by putting his hand on the bloke's shoulder to detain him?
It depends how he does it. I mean, if you just... it all comes down to like how they use the force. So if he gently put his arm on his shoulder or something like that, then it's a bit of a grey area, so I'd say no. But if
You're saying I'll say no. It's a grey area.
It's a grey area, but it depends how he touched him as well. So if he grabbed his shoulder and like you know physically like went to detain him type such, then that is definitely wrong. But if he just like you know touched him on the shoulder as such, like not forcefully, then there's nothing wrong with that.
I got pulled up by a security guard at my local shopping centre some years ago. I've told the story. This is a two-pronged story. One, the security guard did put his hand on my shoulder. But two, it's the only time I've ever been questioned by a security guard. I've been doing some home improvements and I've been doing some painting. And I had this old pair of jeans on that was splattered with paint. It was a cold day and I was wearing a jumper that my cousin gave me who works for the Aboriginal Parks and Gardens. And it's a black jumper with an Aboriginal flag on it. And I was wearing that. And I'd done some shopping in one shop and then Big W. And then I went down to the Coles and I did some more shopping. And as I left the building and about to enter the car park, big hand on my shoulder. Can I please see what's in your bag? Can you show me your receipts?
Yeah, you can't do that.
One, he put his hand on my shoulder, but two, it's the only time I have ever been questioned was when I was wearing an Aboriginal flag. Just putting it out there.
Yeah, but also touching base on how, especially in South Australia, how our industry is completely screwed. So if you do your security course, you have to pay security, do your security course. It costs about $1,500, especially if you go to Cert 3. Then you've got to apply for a security license. Now, if you've got any past criminal history, linked with any biker gangs, even if your brother's linked to a biker gang, you can be refused a security license. So you've already done your course, but then you've got to go for your security license, which they won't do it the other way around, but you've wasted your money. And I've known someone whose cousin was in a biker gang, and he's stand-up bloke, never committed a crime in his life. He got refused his security license because of that.
And did you say even if a family member has a criminal history?
If depending what the family member's criminal history is, you can be refused a security license.
Really?
Bound on that. And even if you pay for a security course and pay for your money, you don't get your money back. You've just wasted $1,500 to $2,000.
Yes, it should be the other way around.
It should be the other way. You should go for your license first. And there's so many other ways in like our industry. Like I worked for Arndale Shopping Centre one day, and that's a rough shopping centre. And I wanted to go buy a stab vest, you know, because it's been known that people get stabbed in that shopping centre in that area.
Really?
And I found out it's actually illegal for me to wear a stab vest. I had to have a H6 license and be in that industry.
Hang on. Why would it be illegal for you to wear a stab vest?
Because I don't have a H6 license.
Why do you need that?
Gun license. Because that's the legislation in South Australia, at least anyway.
Well, that doesn't make any sense. You should be able to wear a stab vest.
Yeah, you can't just wear a stab vest. And the other one I was going to touch base on as well is In South Australia, we obviously got to renew our license every year. Mm-hmm. It costs us about $10 a year. So this year is costing us $300 for the year to renew our license. In Queensland, as that's $300 for 1 year. In Queensland, it's about $450 for 3 years. And in Sydney, it's about $560 for 5 years. Hmm. So we're paying more than triple the amount for other states to renew our security license.
Tell me, if you have a security license in Queensland, can you get a job in South Australia?
No, you have to have a transfer of license.
Oh.
And some, depending on what their courses run or what their laws are, you have to do additional courses sometimes to work in another state.
Hmm. And this is,
I think it's unfair.
Yeah, well, it's another world out there, and I know that a lot of you are up and about at this time of the morning. That's why I wanted to bring it up. But when I saw that footage of the father headbutting the security guard on the Gold Coast, I thought, my God, have you seen it yet?
No, I haven't seen the footage yet. I've seen a few of those. Like, I've had knives brought at me. I've been spat on. I've been bitten. I've been headbutted. And sadly, most of the time it's been women.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of the time it's women, because a lot of them think they're untouchable against a security guard or against a male, that, you know, oh, a male won't be able to hit me because then, you know, men shouldn't hit women or whatnot. And yeah, that has become vile little things at times. Not all, but just a select few that.
Give me an example of what a woman has done to you.
I was at a shopping center. The Coles LPO went to detain the woman for a shoplifting. And we've got a no-touch policy. We're not allowed to touch anyone. But then when he tried to apprehend her, he went to go grab her, say, look, you've got to come back with me. And she started punching him. So then that's become my jurisdiction because she's become violent in the shopping center. I grabbed her and she spat right in my face. And then she tried to punch me. There was another time where I've detained someone because her boyfriend smashed a glass bottle in another security guard's face. And she decided to start kicking the guard, so I grabbed her, and then she started biting into my arm.
Charming. Wouldn't you like to take her home to meet mum?
Oh, exactly, you know, and it's just, and you can't do nothing, you know. If it's a bloke, you can use a bit more force onto the guy, but then your hands are completely tied because you've got 1,000 eyes watching you and another 1,000 cameras. Your hands are tied as a security guard, like, you can't even defend yourself half the time.
No.
Getting arrested or using a license.
I tell you what I've learned, and we like to learn things here on this program. I've learned it's a job I don't think I'd ever want.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not the best industry. I'd love to get out of it one day.
I feel for each and every one of you. Listen, thank you very much for your call, Nathan. I'll let you keep going, and you take care of yourself. All right.
Cheers, mate.
Okay. Yeah. Bye bye.
Foreigner said it best. And it feels like the first time every time on the night shift. Around Australia on the Triple M network.
Taking a hit. 1-3-5-3. Karen, g'day.
Hello, Luke. How are you?
Very well. Are you on the Gold Coast?
Luke, I'm on the Gold Coast. I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller. Well, so great show. Keep up the great work.
Thank you very much, Karen. Appreciate your support. Why are you up?
I'm one of the security officers in this industry that we're having a big discussion about this evening, Luke, and I've got some interesting comments I hope that can further this discussion amongst us all.
And shed some light, yes, please. I wanted to bring it up. We got some calls the other night. I get a lot of calls from security guards because they're up and about this time, and I'm honoured, and I'm honoured and delighted that I can keep you guys company. But when I saw this footage online yesterday, I thought, geez, we were talking last night. I was talking to a security guard about learning self-defense, and he was saying that it isn't compulsory where he was to do a self-defense course. And you see, security guards who are dealing with alcohol and licensed premises are often seeing people at their best, but more often seeing people at their worst when they're refused service or not allowed in because they're intoxicated. And it never ceases to amaze me how many people actually target security guards when they're usually big, huge men. But
correct.
But anyway, it's a tough job, a very tough job at the best of times. And I wanted to highlight it this morning. So anyway, that's where we are.
It is, and we appreciate it, Luke. And just to put the facts out there with regards to working pubs and clubs, we have what we call a crowd controllers component to our licence, and you can't do that kind of work unless you've got your crowd controllers component, and you have to do compulsory self-defence courses to obtain that part of your licence.
Because once upon a time, I guess it wasn't so well regulated, and you used to get just you used to get the biggest and the toughest blokes to do security at your venue, and I remember hearing stories about people being thrown physically into the street and downstairs by bouncers.
And look, unfortunately, I go back a long way as well, Luke, in this industry. I've got some 37 years within it.
Oh, wow.
With regards to, so I go way back to the 80s as a very young police officer up here. And let me tell you, the sexual discrimination, et cetera, that went on back then, you can only well imagine. And the sexual discrimination that goes on with women now is absolutely dreadful.
Tell me.
Well, I'll give you a classic example. I've just recently taken the Department of Human Services / Centrelink to account a conciliation process through the Human Rights Commission, because I actually got thrown out of a job that I was doing for them up here on contract because I'm a woman.
Really? Without naming the business.
Nope.
Because I don't want to get in trouble. Get you into trouble. Well, what happened?
Well, very briefly, Luke, it all ties up to this. One of the young gentlemen hit on it very briefly before, and this is why someone with the amount of years that I have in this industry, the whole industry needs to be a royal commission into this industry in this country, for the simple reason that you're expecting the people to be professional, to carry out a very responsible job with a very limited amount of training, but also the wage scale they pay them is not commensurate with what people are expecting. They expect, you know, they expect a brain surgeon and pay them apprentice's wage. And this is where this all goes bad. But with regards to this situation, I'm not going to mention companies or names, but how it works is this, and this is why the industry is in such disarray. And I'm sure a lot of the guys and girls in the industry that are listening right now will agree with me. Basically, we work for contract companies. They contract themselves to huge, big... Any corporation now will have a security company doing their security for them. And it's usually one of the big four. And how it works is this. Whatever the client wants, in order to keep that contract and keep it alive, the security company will do whatever it takes to keep that contract.
Yep.
They don't care about us. They're not interested in the person in the shirt. If we go to work and get hurt or anything like that, they will do what they have to do to make it look good. But with regards to that, it's basically a bum on a seat. And everybody in our industry knows that. Now, this particular situation we had up here 3 years ago when the G20 summit was on.
Yes, that's right,
I can speak about this now because I said it's been through a conciliation process with the Human Rights Commission. And the only reason why it hasn't become public is because I simply don't have a few thousand lazy dollars lying around to take it to a federal court.
Can I ask you a question, Karen? You're right in the thick of the destination of the Commonwealth
Correct.
Games next year.
Correct. Yes, I am. Yes.
How prepared?
Go on.
How prepared do you think the Gold Coast is?
Oh, in all honesty, Luke, very in the security world, very, very, very well prepared. Yes. Yeah. I would. My professional opinion is this: that it's going to be probably the most technical and the most well prepared security operation that's been ever worldwide with regards to these kind of events.
Wow.
So yeah, and that's my honest opinion.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not making that up. That's
true. Karen, you've been in the game 37 years. I respect every word you're saying.
Thank you very much. But look, back to this little issue, Luke, that creates this problem with our industry. I was going to work along with a lot of other female colleagues we have to put, the world's gone so bad that they actually put security officers in Centrelink offices now to prevent violence towards
I've seen
staff
it.
There.
I've seen it.
Yes.
They actually have security officers.
Correct.
Because people are verbaling and getting physical with the girls and the guys behind the counter when they get given an answer they don't like.
Yeah. Now, my discussion is my point is this: you have as many female clients of Centrelink as you do as males. So that tells me that there's a need, a necessity for female security officers to be in that environment also.
Mm.
Well, this is a true fact the Department of Human Services, when the G20 summit was on, and they mask it and they hide it, but this is what happened. I was working in the Centrelink offices, and I actually got removed from my job overnight, literally overnight, because they only wanted muscle men in there. Literally, they wanted an aggressive look to intimidate people. So all female security officers were removed from their jobs. We lost our jobs. Gone.
Yeah,
we're not allowed to go back to work overnight.
Graham Wynn, if you're listening, can you call in? Are they allowed to do that? Is that discrimination or?
Of course, it's sexual discrimination straight up. Because I've got all the documentation, everything. Because I said I spent the last 3 years, Luke, taking this through to the Human Rights Commission, and they actually fronted up with a couple of barristers worth a lot of money. But as I said, when it goes down to this, they will mask it with, we need a certain type of person, or they'll word it a certain way. But the fact is that 3 years ago they removed all female security officers from that job, and they still have not been replaced with females.
Let me ask you this, Karen. I'm just playing devil's advocate, so bear with me, right?
Sure.
Okay, so I'm the licensee of a pub.
Yep.
And the pub gets a bit rowdy Friday, Saturday nights. I've got live music on, and the clientele can get a bit loud.
Mm-hmm.
You apply to me, and I advertise for some security. You apply for the job. You've got every qualification you need. But my problem is, as a publican, I want the presence of a big male.
Mm-hmm.
Am I allowed to only hire a big male?
Well, put it this way, you can do exactly what you like as a licensee of that establishment, because at the end of the day, who's going to know, Luke? Because if you hire, now, the example is this, if you interview a male person fitting that description who has a security license, and you interview me, who is less than half his size, half his weight, et cetera, I can guarantee you now, as that licensee, you're going to choose him over me.
Yeah, and I just don't have to say anything. It's just like
the
employment expert we talked to, Graham Wynn, was telling me, he's a recruiter, right?
Yeah.
And he was approached by a real estate agency who said, we want a receptionist. We don't care what her typing skills are. We don't care what her computer skills are. We just want a looker. And now that is discriminatory, but Graham said it would have been pointless for him to send anyone else along for the interview except an attractive woman, because no one else was going to get hired.
That's right. But here's the thing, in my situation, Luke, in my industry, in my world, in my profession that I inhabit, I was already doing the job and was doing it very well, because what the point they miss in this industry, I'm talking about women hopefully with a little bit of background and experience with this, what they're missing is that we actually are better at taking the heat and the testosterone out of situations.
But physically, can you cope with a big drunkard? Can you physically cope and restrain someone who's on the drink, belly full of, beer, big, burly bloke, 6'4", who wants a blue?
Well, I've been, because of the amount of years I've been doing it, Luke, I've been trained in how to do it properly, yes.
Yeah.
But however, at my age now, I'd need some help for sure.
Yeah.
But the point is, if you go through correct training. Now, the other thing is this, and a lot of the guys and girls that are listening will agree with this. You see me and that big burly guy. Now, how would you know that I don't have a black belt in karate or something like that?
Well, that's exactly right. No, I understand.
So these people are making an assumption about somebody they know nothing about.
Yeah. See, that's why I would never get the job. I would run away because I have a black belt in origami.
Mine's pretty much the same as that. But the point is, Luke, this is part of the industry, but very briefly, touching on the whole of the industry, and again, all of my crew that are listening would agree, we have issues of, I think it was Bill touched on it earlier about, you're only ever working as a subcontractor, it's very difficult to get full-time permanent work. They create this industry, whereas I said earlier, they want professionals, but they only want to pay them an apprentice as wage. This industry needs to completely be investigated, completely be looked into, completely be overhauled, and that includes training, licensing. The young gentleman just now about the cost of licensing. I mean, at the end of the day, we are expected to pay all of this money to be licensed security officers in each state, and it varies so greatly. And yet sometimes we're earning a wage the same as what a cleaner would earn.
Yeah, look, I tell you something interesting. Earlier this evening, we had a camera crew in here from the ABC, and they were doing a story on this program, The Night Shift, and me and Jess.
All right.
Because of the reaction that we had from callers over the 7:30 Report's expose on the tip-top van drivers. Anyway, we had the guys in here. They were here for 2.5 hours filming us and interviewing myself and interviewing Jess. And they're listening to the program. You're talking about a Royal Commission into a really important industry here. I wouldn't be surprised if they're listening to this, and I wouldn't be surprised if the 7:30 Report does a story on the security industry in Australia. There you go. And I'll tell you what we'll do. Jess is in contact with the producer of the program. We're gonna suggest that they have a listen to our podcast. I bet you just watch this space. I bet you they do something on security in Australia soon.
Well, Luke, I would love it to happen because I've been in this industry because I actually love my work. I love what I do. Whether people like it or not, we are a necessary evil in our society. We are what they call the plastic police. The police forces, countrywide, internationally, have fully admitted that their police forces could not run without security officers. We do the work that they simply do not have the manpower, the time, or the budget to deal with.
Yeah. Look, listen, we've gone so long, Karen. You're a fascinating person to talk to, and I want to stay in touch with you, Karen. Just stay there. Beg your pardon?
But I said, by all means, Luke, I'd love you to. Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, look, send us an email. The email is nightshift@MMM.com.au. Put your details there and we'll talk to you again about this very topic. But you watch the space, you watch the 7:30 Report. I wouldn't be surprised if they do a story soon. Thank you for your call.
Thank you very much, Luke. Thanks for your time, guys. You're doing a great job. Love your work.
Opinions are flying. The studio hotline is running hot. 5 hours to kill on the MMM network with The Night Shift.